Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Text 66, Canto 4, Chapter 24. Pramatako chaya iti kritya chintaya. Pravriddha lobham vishayeshu lalasam. Tram apramatak sahasa vipadyase. Kule lihano hir ivakam antaka. Translation, my dear Lord, all living entities within this material world are mad after planning for things, and they are always busy with the desire to do this or that. This is due to uncontrollable greed. The greed for material enjoyment is always existing in the living entity, but your Lordship is always alert, and in due course of time, you strike him just like a snake seizes a mouse and very easily swallows him. That's time. Continuation from yesterday's discussion. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Everyone is greedy. And everyone makes plans for material enjoyment. In his lust for material enjoyment, the living entity is described as a madman, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 3.27, prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. Quote, or the translation, the bewildered soul, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, thinks himself to be the doer of activities which are, in actuality, carried out by nature. Everything is enacted by the laws of nature. And these laws are under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The atheists or unintelligent men do not know this. They are busy making their own plans. And big nations are busy expanding their empires. And yet we know that in due course of time, many empires have come into existence and been destroyed, like the mouse and the snake. Many aristocratic families were created by people in their extreme madness. But we can see that in due course of time, those families and empires have all been destroyed. But still the foolish atheists do not accept the supreme authority of the Lord. Such foolish people unnecessarily concoct their own duties without reference to the supreme authority of the Lord. The so-called political leaders are busy making plans to advance the material prosperity of their nation. But factually, these political leaders only want an exalted position for themselves. Due to their greed for material position, they falsely present themselves as leaders before the people and collect their votes. Although they are completely under the grip of the law, the laws of material nature. These are some of the faults of modern civilization. Without taking to God consciousness and accepting the authority of the Lord, the living entities become ultimately confused and frustrated in their plan-making attempts. Due to their unauthorized plans for economic development, the price of commodities is rising daily all over the world. So much so that it has become difficult for the poorer classes. And they are suffering the consequences. And due to lack of Krishna consciousness, people are being fooled by so-called leaders and plan makers. Consequently, the sufferings of the people are increasing according to the laws of nature, which are backed by the Lord. Nothing can be permanent within this material world. Therefore, everyone should be allowed to take shelter of the Absolute in order to be saved. Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 5:29, Bhoktaram yagatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suradam sarvabhutanam. What's the last line? Gyatvamam shantam richati. The sages know me as the ultimate purpose of all sacrifices and austerities, the supreme lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities. Attain peace from the pangs of material miseries. Been a noisy kitchen this morning. Like a dinosaur in there. Okay. Final paragraph. If one wants peace of mind and tranquility in society, he must accept the fact that the real enjoyer is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord is the proprietor of everything all over the universe. And he is the supreme friend of all living entities as well. By understanding this, people can become happy and peaceful individually and collectively. So the verse again. Pramatam uchar iti kritya chintaya pravridha lobham vishayeshu lalasam tvam apramatak sahasabi padyase shuleli hano here ivaktam antakaha. My dear Lord, all living entities within this material world are mad after planning for things. And they're always busy with a desire to do this or do that. This is due to uncontrollable greed. The greed for material enjoyment is always existing in the living entity. But your lordship is always alert. And in due course of time, you strike him just like a snake seizes a mouse and very easily swallows him. So watch out. These are part of the prayers or stotras. Here it's song. The song sung by Lord Shiva. He's assisting the Supreme Lord as the destroyer, but it's actually the Supreme Lord that's the destroyer, as well as the creator and maintainer, because he's the source ultimately of everything. And focus is going on the component or the feature of destruction. And it's time that destroys all things. The previous verse was a series of verses is describing the inability for people in general, that is, people who are attached to sense enjoyment, to detect the presence of the personality of Godhead in life. In one sense, sense enjoyment seems like that's life. I mean, we have senses, and there's objects of senses, and the senses come in contact with objects of the senses, and there's a sensation. You feel something. And so you like that feeling or you don't like that feeling, and it seems quite innocent. And like, you know, that's life. What can you do? There's senses and there's things around us. There's objects. The problem isn't the senses and the sense objects. The blame doesn't go to the knife. The blame goes to how the knife is used. And it can be used beneficially or it can be used detrimentally. The senses and the sense objects in themselves are not the problem. Understanding that the devotees can engage their senses in activities within this world and be in the liberated position. I was reading just the other day in the third canto of Bhagavatam, where Vidura is meeting Uddhava. Vidura's on pilgrimage. It's been a long pilgrimage, a 34-year pilgrimage. He's really detached from, you know, home is long forgotten. 34 years worth of, I mean, think of where you might have been 34 years ago. Some of you are probably not 34 years old yet, and wherever you were 34 years ago, you're not attached to it. And if you're older than 34 years, how attached are you to where you were 34 years ago? Vidura was quite detached. But moreover, he had become very purified by visiting holy places and hearing from the saintly persons in those holy places. So he was on a very elevated platform. He was ready, by Krishna's arrangement, to meet Uddhava. So he met Uddhava. He had just been at Prabhas Kshetra, one of the holy places that he visited. And what's the significance of Prabhas Kshetra? It's the very same place where the Yadus went to hold a big festival. And it's the very same place where all the Yadus were destroyed at Prabhas Kshetra. You know that description. Samba, one of Krishna's sons. He wasn't just a boy, he was married. But he was in a very boyish-like mood, along with some of the other sons of Krishna. They were poking fun at the brahmanas. That was a big mistake. So they dressed Samba up like a pregnant woman. First put a sari on, covering his face. And he had in his belly a big mound of iron. And so the other boys came forward and said, "Can you tell this Mataji what kind of child she will have? Can you give the forecast of what will this child be like?" The sages knew exactly what was going on. They were just pulling their leg and making fun of them. So he said, "We'll tell you. That child is going to be the destruction of the Yadu dynasty. Now go away." So the boys went right away to Ugrasena, the king, and explained everything that happened. They had offended the Brahmanas, and the Brahmanas had given this curse. Ugrasena, what to do, what to do? Ugrasena consulted his ministers, and the decision was made to take that lump of iron and grind it into powder and throw the powder into the sea so there won't be any lump of iron left to destroy the Yadu dynasty. So you know what happened? It washed up on the shore in a place where there were some reeds at Prabhas Kshetra. And so when the Yadus went there to have their festival, they had some sporting. So they saw the reeds that now were like iron because they were iron filings. They were no longer just soft reeds. They were like steel bars or iron bars. And so they were having combat because they're Kshatriyas. But the combat got a little intense, especially because they had taken some rice wine and they were a little over the top. And the combat ensued and they destroyed themselves completely. By Krishna's arrangement to withdraw all those personalities who were his relatives back to their position of demigods so that Krishna could leave their appearance in this world having now been completed. So, Vidura knew perfectly well that the whole Yadu dynasty is gone. But the pain of it was too much. So he didn't want to speak about it. When he saw Uddhava, who was in the assembly of personalities from Dwaraka, he was the topmost. So naturally, socially, he inquired, how are all the relatives in Dwaraka? How are all the members of the Yadu dynasty doing? Prabhupada comments, his question was not practical. Because he knew perfectly well, they're gone. But it was psychological, or it was to add soothing balm to hit the pain of separation from the members of the Yadu dynasty. So he began glorifying them, one after the next, one after the next, one after the next. Then concluding, can you say, how are Krishna and Balaram, the two personalities of Godhead who have appeared at the head of the Yadu dynasty? Can you say, how is Vasudev, he who gave birth to the, because of his purity, he gave birth to the supreme pure? And Prabhupada explains there's the platform of Vasudev, and then there's the person, Vasudev. So to give rise to Vasudev, one has to be on the Vasudev platform. So Vasudev was on the Vasudev platform. And he became the father, Vasudev. And then a number of the other residents of Dwaraka were named. And one of them was Yuyutsava. Not a very prominent personality mentioned in Mahabharata, but Yuyutsava had a very special relationship with Krishna. And once when, the detail was Krishna was visiting in Hastinapur to attend might have been to attend the marriage of Draupadi. Krishna had come to take part in the funeral of the Pandavas because they were supposed to have been dead, but lo and behold, they weren't dead. Krishna still remained. So Krishna was present. at the same time that Arjuna won the hand of Draupadi. Krishna and Balaram were there. They were enjoying it like anything. These five powerful brahmanas, and Arjuna won the hand of Draupadi, and so Krishna attended the wedding of the Pandavas and Draupadi. Afterwards, Krishna went back, but Yuyutsava, who has another name, Satyaki, he wanted to stay behind and get trained by Arjuna in the art of bowmanship, which was later very useful during the Kurukshetra battle. And from time to time, Krishna would refer to, Satyaki advised me this way. Kind of like Uddhava, he was an advisor. He was a Kshatriya, but had that relationship with Krishna. So, Vidura is describing the unique qualification of Yuyutsava, that even beyond, he was expert materially and expert spiritually. He received all knowledge from Arjuna in the art of bowmanship. And where did Arjuna get it? He got it from Drona. And where did Drona get it? He got it from Parashuram. You can't get better than Parashuram. So in disciplic succession, Yuyutsava had that material perfection, skill, expertise. But also spiritually, because he used that expertise in service to Krishna. And therefore, according to what Vidura says, he attained a transcendental state that even the most excellent of renunciates will not attain. Because the impersonal sannyasis, those who renounce the world as false and try very diligently and arduously to control the senses and control the mind and fix the mind in Brahman, they may attain the state of Brahman realization. But Yuyutsava attained the eternal abode of Krishna. Now he's asking the very unique thing is he's asking about how is Yuyutsava, and he's just described that he went back to Godhead. But in relation to this verse, the position of a Vaishnav that has received something from Krishna and has used that something, it perfected that something, and has used that something in Krishna's service. That's the platform of spiritual perfection. It's the tortoise that extends his limbs for service and withdraws his limbs when not required. Very perfect example. That's sense control. There is service to Krishna. There the senses go. Service to Krishna. No service to Krishna. Where do the senses go? They're under control, the control being service to Krishna. And if there's no service to Krishna, just like this conversation with this middle-aged lady that's called herself a yoga teacher. She said, if there's something in front of me that I think tastes good, I can't control myself. I eat it. There's the object, there's the senses. Consequences, I don't worry about it. Just go for it. But a devotee has this capacity of sense control. But those that don't have the capacity of sense, those that don't have the object of the personality of Godhead, sense control is mechanical at best. And everything mechanical has its breaking point. Or everyone in this material world is controlled by their own strength. Simply the strength of sense control. They all have their breaking point. They have the point where they become angry, or the point where they become lusty, the point where they become greedy. And this is the verse by Lord Shiva that's explaining all living entities have this condition. And that condition makes them pramatha, mad. This word here, pravridha lobham. Lobham means greed. And pravridha means very advanced greed. That's called material civilization. Very advanced greed. Just listening to Prabhupada explaining, someone may eat off a leaf plate. Someone may just eat off their hand. Advancement is get a ceramic plate, a plastic plate, or a paper plate. Maybe a gold plate, and that's advancement. Pravridha lobham. That's not advancement. It's taken as advancement in the absence of God consciousness, in the absence of God conscious principle. Getting a fancier version, a polished animal life, is advancement. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending in a polished version. So we've all heard this so many times. The animal is sleeping on the floor, and the man is sleeping on his bed, and he's thinking this is advancement. The dog is having sex in the street, and the man is having sex in his apartment, and he's thinking this is advancement, etc. Sleeping, mating, eating, defending. We have so many sophisticated, because the government is putting gazillions of dollars, rupees, and every other currency you can find into defense. So they have very, very sophisticated systems of destroying each other. Very sophisticated. Very sophisticated. And they're working on more sophisticated. Nanotechnology. A little mosquito-like thing can go around and spy on people and send signals back, and you know exactly what they're doing, what they're saying, what's going on. It's all about war technology. Very sophisticated. This is advancement of modern civilization. Pravridha lobham vishayeshu valasam. It's not a new thing. This is, you know, Lord Shiva, thousands and thousands. This is Satya Yuga. This is a long time ago. Same thing. Old wine in new bottle, Prabhupada says. This is advancement. Same thing. The greed for material enjoyment is always existing in the living entity. And thinking, getting the senses together with sense objects that give a better buzz, that's advancement. So while that process is going on, time is there, like a serpent watching the mouse. Very patiently watching the mouse. You've seen cats watch the mice. Their ears are up. They're pounced. They're perched, ready to pounce. And they're just waiting for the right moment. And then, boom! Or National Geographic has these, you know, there's this nice looking little insect sitting on a leaf, and there's a frog staring at the insect, and all of a sudden this long tongue goes out. Thus ends that nice little insect. And the previous verse was describing, we don't see the hand of Krishna there, but the hand of Krishna is there. Like the serpent swallows, grabs the mouse and easily swallows it. One swift move. thus ends the mouse. So the mouse is like the materialist that's striving to fulfill their desires for greed. And so many times Prabhupada would speak about this. Great empires, and he would name them. You know, the Napoleon and Hitler and Stalin, and they built big empires, or the German group of people, and they had big, you know, big kingdoms. And where are those kingdoms now? Where is Napoleon now, and where is Stalin now? And they're gone. The persons are gone, their kingdoms are gone, the empires are gone. But they were so intensely engaged in developing. Or great aristocratic families. They're gone. History books are filled with them, but they're all gone. And yet still people continue building their empire, building their aristocratic family, building their strength, making their alliances. All to be taken away by the hand of time. So people are doing this, and foolish people are following those people that are doing this. It's not a new thing. It's been going on since time immemorial. When I was reading this, I'll end with this reference. Oh, there's two other things. One is, I saw a video of Yogi Bhajan sitting with Srila Prabhupada. When I saw the video, it was so long ago, I didn't even know who Yogi Bhajan was, but you know, the big turban, and he was, you know, a very prominent personality during the same time that Prabhupada was present. And Yogi Bhajan was calling for a world conference for peace, because that was the mood of the era. Call for peace. And he was moving his hand like this. Let us all bring all the spiritual leaders together and let them come together. And Prabhupada cut him off and said, they will never. Didn't even finish his sentence. You know, bring peace. They will never. They will never means, it's right here very clearly, that it's acceptance of the shelter of the personality of Godhead that brings peace. Bhoktaram Yugatapasam Sarvalo. So taking to some platitude of peace, bring them together and love one another. That was his words. They will never. Unless there's acceptance of the shelter of the personality of Godhead, that message should be promoted. But that message was not the message that he wanted to promote. It was just this platitude. Like verbiage, empty words, come together, love one another. The sentiment is fine, but practically it won't happen without the shelter of the personality of Godhead. And the other is this very strong, the other scriptural reference that's made, prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimudhatma. The reference is in relation to the bewildered spirit soul, just as here, you know, the pramata, vimudha, they're both not very complimentary terms. Mad, bewildered, influenced by ignorance is madness and bewilderment. The it's like a staple feature of madness is thinking, I am doing things. We all think like this. Not, you know, just on occasion. It's like bread and butter, or chapatis and rice, or whatever it is. You know, it's our staple. We're going to do something. Minus the thought of, this is being carried out by material nature. It's all being carried out under the laws of material nature, and there's a controller of material nature. Our practice of Krishna consciousness should be upon Krishna, and being an instrument of Krishna, according to his will. But the conditioned tendency is very hard to let go of, or not be under the grip of that conditioning. So while we're struggling with that, here comes the serpent of time. watching. Every moment. At some point, we're gone. You know, the plan is gone. There may be announcement, there may not be announcement. It's gone. There is this, so the message of the prayers here is there is a supreme controller, and one needs to recognize that supreme controller. Not be afraid of time or afraid of God, like this vicious, you know, predator that's going to come and take us away. But we should be aware that we're under that control. And in that position, the forces of nature work very differently. The internal potency begins to act. That's coming up in upcoming prayers of Lord Shiva to Lord Vishnu. I'll end there. See if there's any questions or comments.
Maharaj, we were discussing that the forces of nature acts like a snake pouncing on a mouse for a materialist. What happens in case of, like, there are empires, and how do we compare that to the acharyas and some who became very prominent at one point of time and had a lot of followers? So how does this equation apply to them?
Well, their destiny, it's described in the second canto of Bhagavatam, with every passage of day into night, one is advanced closer to death. Life is taken away by the advancement of time. But for a Vaishnav, with the passage of time, they're that much closer to the eternal situation in the kingdom of God. Their life is glorious. Every moment of their life is glorious. It's bringing them closer to the supreme destination, the supreme goal of life, the stage of spiritual perfection. Passage of time is very wonderful. It doesn't steal everything away. Those things that are temporary, yes. But that which is in relation to a pure devotee, the great acharyas like you describe, their position is eternally glorious. Even in this world, what to speak of in the spiritual world. That service which they have rendered, the great acharyas, is a permanent asset for them. They may have built some temple or some something, left teachings, and maybe the temple over time, the stone or the bricks or the something deteriorate. You can't find the temple anymore. The physical manifestation may be withdrawn, but there's, as far as the soul is concerned, the spiritual asset of the soul is with them for that service that they've rendered eternally. Kritta punya punja, Prabhupada would use that phrase. The gopis were speaking about the cowherd boys, marveling at what good fortune they have, what pious meritorious activities must they have done. Wow, a long one. Term paper. This question is with regards to faith and free will. We talked about that yesterday, didn't we? Suppose I have a problem. No. And I approached my mentor in the temple for a solution. If he had given me an instruction which I feel causes a short-term risk if I execute it, and if I don't execute it, I have a long-term risk. Being bewildered by the short-term risk, I develop faith towards the risk. I develop faith towards the risk than my mentor. But because my mentor loves me, he gives me free will. Could you please help me? How do I move my faith from the risk to the instruction of my mentor in proportion to the free will he gave me and finally execute the instruction given by him? I think I get the idea. How do I get over my mental block that, oh, this is going to be difficult? Existence, and yesterday I was speaking about preaching, and with preaching there's risk. The flip side is don't preach and there's also risk. Just stay in the temple all day long. Don't go anywhere. And there's risk. There's padam, padam, yadvi padam, natesham. There's risk just existing. So supposing this question, you're in a situation, is it called a problem? And there's a path to get out of the problem, but to get out of the problem, there's a risk. Stay where you are, there's another risk. Take the path, there's another risk. So inaction is another action, which also has its risk. But frankly, how can you remain inactive? According to Bhagavad Gita, you can't remain inactive, you have to do something. So now that the question involves also this free will. Free will is active at every moment. It's not like your mentor gave you free will. You have free will. It's inherent in the soul. And so with free will, you can make choices. And your choice can be, I don't want to make choices. Well, you have to make, that's a choice too, but you have to make choices. And that's not even one of your choices. I give up my free will. I'll become zero. You can't. So the non-choice is the choice of status quo. And status quo is the problem stays. So it's the inherent in the question is that the mentor gives the option for making choices certainly is there in any case. Mentor or no mentor. Or a path of solution where you fit. So there's the element of faith is whether you stay stuck or you move, or the lack of faith, stay stuck or move. So you can take a look at where your faith lies. And you know, from the nature of this question, I know the present situation is not good. It's inherently problematic. I need to move. So where do you place your faith? Make the step, part of the thing of inertia is a thing at rest has a tendency to stay at rest. But also the thing in motion has a tendency to stay in motion. So take a step that's doable in the direction of what is being advised. So that you're not the other kind of inertia, you're making some step. And like the discussion yesterday, when you see, you make a step and you see that Krishna is reciprocating, that's encouraging. Very encouraging. It allows one to take even another very little step and slowly step by step by step. It takes some exercise or acting in faith. Okay. Do one more and then end it. Oh. How shall I come out of sex desire? It seems to be impossible. That's a pretty direct question. um, how to come out of any kind of desire that's of this world. It exists in its original state on the platform of the soul. The soul, maybe it's a little too, we start with regulation, according to the teaching of Bhagavad Gita. And there's dualities of material nature that are pushing and pulling. And one tolerates that pushing and pulling or those urges by regulating and investing consciousness in that which is eternal instead of that which is temporary. All the while cultivating a deeper appreciation of that which is eternal, or a taste for the eternal, or a taste for serving Krishna. And when there is service to Krishna, the regulation is utilizing in service to Krishna only. Meanwhile, that's the dovetail principle, meanwhile, internally cultivating Krishna consciousness. And as the internal cultivation of Krishna consciousness grows and grows and grows, then that attraction for duality fades and fades and fades. So it starts with recognizing the situation. That's what the question says. Then following this sequence that I just mentioned, because it's just right in Bhagavad Gita. Starts with tolerating, that is withdrawing attention, investing of consciousness in the temporary, and instead choosing, this is a free will act, choosing to place consciousness in that which is eternal instead of that which is temporary, and moving the fulcrum where the stronger comes the investment of consciousness in the eternal or in service unto Krishna, this other diminishes. It fades. It works that way. It's like, you know, when you're in darkness, what do I do about being in darkness? Well, you turn on the light. You may not know where the switch is to turn on the light. So generally speaking, the switch is not an on and off switch, it's a variable switch, or a dimmer switch. It goes, it's not just off or on. So, increase one's focus of attention upon Krishna, and devotional practices unto Krishna, withdraw one's attention from the temporary, and regulate that under the codes of the Vedas. And gradually that attraction fades. Because it's not of the soul. The happiness of the soul, the nature of the soul is service unto Krishna. Okay, I'll end with that. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.